The BS Report is presented by Subway. Football season is over. Footlong season is just beginning. For a limited time, get any piled high regular footlong for just $5. Any footlong, just $5. Hurry in, Subway. Eat fresh. Eat fresh. The BS Report is a free-flowing conversation that occasionally touches on mature subjects.
First of all,
this is the BS Report with Bill Simmons.
It might be cool, I don't know. And if it's not, I don't care.
The BS Report with Bill Simmons.
Bill Simmons works for ESPN. He's also named the sports guy, and he writes a comical sports column. He must be a popular dude.
The BS Report.
It's got a real dirty sound, like a rusty steak knife cutting through a well-aged steak.
Now.
Here's Bill Simmons.
All right, a little hangover from four straight days of college basketball. And I know somebody who's hungover. We're going right to the Subway Fresh Take Hotline. Mr. J.A. Adonde from ESPN.com. What's happening?
Full hangover. So I won't even take that as a slur at all because, yes, I am hungover.
Basketball hangover.
Imbibing in basketball for four straight days.
Yeah. It really didn't get going until Friday night. The North Dakota State game was really fun, and I had totally enjoyed it. But other than that, really, it was kind of a stinky tournament. And then Friday night, it just took off. That was fun.
It was great. My one regret was that it just seemed like Gus Johnson didn't have any of the close games. You know, ones that came down to, you know, one or two shots at the end. Those are just begging for Gus Johnson, and for whatever reason, he wasn't assigned those games.
Well, he had the game. It just didn't work out. He was doing the North Dakota State-Kansas game, and there was a stretch from like 11 minutes to 8 minutes when it became clear that North Dakota State wasn't going to go away. And they it was like four straight shots they took that all like rimmed in and out. All of them seemed like they were going in. Gus was on DEFCON 4. He's ready. If any of them go in, he's going to another stratosphere. And it just never got going. And, you know, they played kind of out of their minds. It was a little different than the team that played Pittsburgh, who actually, the 16th seed, that played a really good game and was in that game. North Dakota State just had one guy who got hot. But I was so hoping for a
forecast. What's that kid's name? Woodside?
Ben Woodside, a.k.a.
Man,
the spitting image of Mark Price. He's Mark Price Jr. Unbelievable. Hey, wouldn't you take him on a pro team?
This kid can play. I mean, you know, you keep waiting for this year's Steph Curry. I like the Curtis Jackson kid. But, you know, now they're done. You know, just when you start to fall in love with a player or a team, it seems like they're out. That's one thing I hate about the tournament. It promises all this equality and, you know, Cinderella stuff. But really, by the time you get down to the A, especially, it's the same old faces.
The guy who took the biggest jump for me personally was the Kansas center, Cole Aldrich, which is a very nice name, by
you
the
know,
way. But
I've been liking him down the stretch. I was watching him in the conference tournament, and, you know, he's just a solid guy. He, you know, he's not going to be a Yao Ming or Kevin Garnett or something, but, you know, if you want a solid guy, just gets the ball around the basket and knows what to do with it.
Super solid. Reminds me of like Greg Ostertag on his greatest day ever. You know what I mean? Somebody who's going to follow up shots and not do anything wrong. But, you know, obviously much better than Ostertag. But one of those guys that doesn't take anything off the table and just kind of does stuff. North Dakota State couldn't stop that play where Sharon Collins just basically threw it off the backboard for him.
Well, that was one thing I loved, though, was Sharon Collins, you know, was not going to let his team lose that game. You keep waiting for that, and that's what I look for. And that's actually why I picked Kansas to go pretty deep into this tournament, because I just figured when you get a guy like that and you get, you know, any remnants of a team that's been to the Final Four or won a championship, I call it like a Final Four echo. You see this team, they lose everybody, you think, oh, they're done, they're not going to go back. But there's something that's in these players. And, you know, anytime you can bring a guy back, especially a guard who's been on a Final Four team, they just, you know, you also have to keep in mind they don't want their careers to end, and they're playing, they're fighting for that. These are guys with a lot of pride, and they're not going out like that. And that's why I think what you're seeing from Sharon Collins in Kansas.
What was another example of that? Like the 97 Kentucky team?
Yeah, I was trying to think of examples like that, but it just seems like you see it time and again. Then the Michigan State team, the year after they won it, then they make a surprisingly deep run.
Yeah, that'd be an interesting list. I'd like to see that list.
They usually go at least a round deeper than you'd expect them to.
Yeah.
And I think you can attribute that to Final Four experience and also coaching. Like Tom Izzo has his team in the Sweet 16 again. You know, Rick Pitino is always pretty much a lock to go to the Sweet 16. I mean, it's no accident that you see these same coaches, no matter what schools they go to, in Pitino's case, they're always going to be good. They're always going to get their team at least to the Sweet 16. And in Pitino's case, he keeps getting back to the Final Four with different schools.
And Bob Huggins. Oh, wait. No, he's not an example.
It doesn't quite work out that way for Huggy Bear.
Well, you're more of an NBA fan than a college fan. So when you're watching this, are you just watching this for the games, or in the back of your head, are you like me? Are you just thinking, like, what is this guy going to be like as a pro? What is this guy going to be like as a pro?
I'm certainly doing that. Here's the thing. I mean, I've watched college basketball strictly for the tournament, you know, just to watch, okay, how are these guys going to do in the tournament? You know, which one of these players am I going to see in the league? I don't love college basketball in and of itself. I love the NCAA tournament. The NCAA tournament is almost a flawless event. You know, it's something that they get it so right, and I just hate to hear when they tinker. I don't like the fact that they added the play-in game. I don't know what was so bad about 64 teams. You know, if you need to get another conference in, just bounce one of the at-large bids. But, you know, the format of it, the drama that it creates, and now especially between, you know, DirecTV and the March Madness On Demand Online, where you're taking out the fact that you could be missing a game you'd rather watch because your affiliate won't show it.
Right.
There's nothing wrong with this. And if you miss something, if you miss a play, or if you don't get to hear your favorite announcer, that's on you for not having the technology. But yeah, it's all there for you. So given that, there's no complaint. Who complains about March Madness? The format of the event itself. You might say, well, there's no upsets this year. But is there anything wrong with the format of the event? Nothing.
This would be a fun game, complain about March Madness. I guess
you can't.
Well, I would have two minor complaints. The first one is that the crowds suck. For the most part, it's kind of that same Super Bowl type crowd where there's an inordinate amount of people there just to kind of be there, but
well,
don't actually
care
about
anything. Do you reward, you know, if you want a passionate crowd, now you get UCLA playing in Philadelphia against Villanova, and yeah, that was a passionate crowd, but is that fair?
No, probably not. No,
so
I'm just
can't have it both ways.
I'm trying to nitpick. And I just don't think the quality of play is very good for anybody who truly loves basketball. Like, it basically comes any close game.
That's a complaint about college basketball. That's not the fault of the NCAA tournament. That's a complaint with college basketball. And that is one of the things that drives me crazy. Like there's like this little point guard was guarding Chase Buttinger, and he won't go inside. I'm thinking, post him up. You know, I'm screaming at my TV sometimes. You'll get a switch on, you know, Dwan Blair's got a 6'2 guy on him, and I'm thinking, give him the ball inside. And they don't do it because they're so committed to running their robotic offenses that's why I can't watch college basketball on a consistent basis.
Well, and also in the last 2 minutes, any close game, it always just comes down to slash and kick. There's no plan B. It's just I'm going to try to drive a little bit and create a three for somebody else. And if that guy can't get it off, then he drives and he throws it back. I don't know. It's not totally that interesting to me. It's exciting, obviously. And you have stuff like Friday night where you have the two games basically happening at the same time that are going into overtime and all that stuff. But I still feel like the college hoops that we grew up with was a much, much, much better product.
I mean, think you'll never have a Final Four again like the 82 one. Jordan, Worthy, Perkins, Olajuwon, Drexler. Who are the Louisville guys on?
Louisville had Rodney McRae, and they had
McRae's were there.
Billy
Thompson.
I mean,
you know, you're just not going to have just that abundance of talent again, you know, guys that you're going to be watching play basketball for a long, long time. That's not going to happen again.
Yeah, and I don't mean to sound like grumpy old fart guy hitting his late 30s who thinks things are better than the old days, but one of the things I did like about college hoops was it was like high school in that you had a team where you have the seniors, the juniors. Like James Worthy on that 82 Tar Heels team was like 35 years old. He had a full beard. The guy, you know, he could have rented a car. He was so old. And then you have Jordan, who's like this precocious baby face just out of high school.
Ewing was a freshman. Oh, we left that guy out. Hello, Patrick Ewing and Sleepy Floyd. Those guys were in that Final Four, too.
Yeah, and Sleepy was, I think, a senior. He was a junior or senior. Ewing was a freshman.
And Sleepy looked about 35, too.
Yeah. I just liked kind of how the older guys would give way to the younger guys, and then the young guys would get old. I like watching guys age in college, and I think that's the thing. You see it sometimes with some of the not as gigantic programs, and you see it with Duke, I guess.
And you know what's weird is that for a while, I think it's all messed up now with this one-year-and-out thing because
I hate it.
For a while, when the top players were just going straight to the pros, And basically the winning formula for the NCAA was to get a bunch of guys who weren't quite good enough to, you know, go directly to the pros or even to leave early. So now you'd have teams like that Michigan State team that just where they had seniors. You know, you had seniors who were pretty good, like Mateen Cleaves as a good college basketball player. Wasn't a guy who was going to, you know, do anything in the pros, but, you know, he's a guy you want quarterback in your team in college. And you'd have a, you know, a bunch of experienced guys, and that would be the teams that you would pick to go deep into the tournament. But now you've got guys, you know, like USC, where you have, you know, O.J. Mayo comes and then he leaves, Beasley comes to Kansas State and leaves, and it just disrupts the recruiting, I think, for these teams and these programs, and there is no continuity, and it's hard to pick which team. Okay, are you going to have a bunch of guys play together and develop and become experienced, and you can bank on that team, or do you just pick whatever team just kind of happens to throw it together that year? I mean, I do not like any of my picks in the Final Four this year. I got Pittsburgh winning it all. I feel horrible about that from game one. I didn't feel a whole lot better the way they played in game two.
Well, look at UCLA. You take this year's team that made the second round and put Russell Westbrook and Kevin Love on it. It's a fascinating team.
Yeah, you know? And last year's team, you couldn't fall in love with and think, okay, they'll be back. Think about that Duke team that got crushed by UNLV, but then all those guys came back, and they were a mini dynasty. That's the closest thing we've had to a dynasty in a long time. Think about the fact that the Fab Five stayed 2 years. Nowadays, you wouldn't even have that.
Yeah, and when Weber left, everybody was kind of like bummed out, like, oh, come on, man, come back for one more year. Meanwhile, he's waiting 60 million waiting for him.
I mean, nowadays, you wouldn't even get 2 years out of that group.
No. And I think it's something that we've all kind of just accepted at this point. But at the same time, you look at Arizona, they're the Cinderella, they made the Sweet 16. Jared Bayless left last year. I think he was a freshman, wasn't he?
Yeah.
He left after 1 year. Now imagine putting him on that team.
Man.
So I really, you know, and I think this is something the NBA is going to do. I think they're going to move the age limit up to 20. I think that's going to be part of the next collective bargaining agreement. And I think that's going to help college a lot more than people realize. Even to get these blue chip guys for 2 years instead of one. You know, last year Durant could have played with DJ Augustine in the tournament. You get Durant for 2 years in college? Come on.
Yeah.
So, I don't know. That's my only nitpick. But
that's about it. You know what's funny? The tournament, here's how good it is. I don't like people talking about their fantasy teams and football or baseball. I don't want to hear your bad beat stories from poker. But you can talk all day about your pool and your bracket. Don't get sick of it.
Right.
You notice that? You know, I don't mind people say, oh, man, I had, you know, Louisville in my bracket and they lost. You know, I don't mind if people say that at all. I'm fascinated. I want to hear what your bracket's doing. Who'd you pick? How are you doing in your pool?
Well, I always do terrible, and that's why I refuse to give money to pools anymore because I just don't like – might as well just take $20
so
and burn.
You just do it strictly for recreational purposes? This might be the only thing you do for recreational purposes when it comes to sports.
I don't like gambling when I have 0%. And, in fact, I went the other way. I picked BC to make the Elite Eight. Just because I hate BC and I knew it would be putting the kibosh on them. So I actually used my pool.
That worked.
I used the pool to affect other colleges. But yeah, you know, where did this chalk thing come from? I feel like I'd never heard of this until a week ago and now it's like I hear chalk this, chalk that.
I never heard of it until about 4 years ago. And then the first, you know, Tony Kornheiser was always talking about it on PTI. He's always, you're going with the chalk. And now the chalk is just a part of that March Madness lingo.
No, I mean, I know it's been lingering, but now it's to the point where, when did it go mainstream? Like, my mom used it. Actually, she did. I made that up. But, yeah, I mean, it's become like this mainstream phrase, and I don't really know.
Well, because last year you had the chalk Final Four. You had the four number one seeds.
I wonder who created it, though.
Anti-chalk guy. You can't do it. But last year, you couldn't avoid chalk. When you got four number one seeds in the Final Four last year, all of a sudden, everybody's talking chalk. Chalk.
Hey, Joe Mead.
Yes.
Jameed, will you find out, while Jay and I are talking, will you find out how this chalk thing started?
I'll
and who was to blame? I think I don't like it. I think I'm leaning toward the fact that I do not like it.
Not like chalk?
I don't. I think, first of all, I don't really understand it. Like, what does it mean?
Does it mean you have all chalk
on a chalkboard?
I don't understand the origin at all myself. You're right. And I never heard it until, I'd say, 3 or 4 years ago when the PTI guys were talking about it.
On a scale of 1 to 10, how little did you miss Billy Packer?
Well, you need that lightning round. I love Clark Kellogg. I've known Clark for a long time. But don't you miss having that curmudgeon around?
I kind of did a little bit.
See?
I missed having somebody that brought out weird reactions out of me that, you know, made me almost not like myself because I didn't like him.
You know, Clark's a very agreeable guy.
He's a nice guy.
You know, he's a great guy, but he's not going to make you angry.
No. You know what was weird?
You want to throw something at the TV when Billy Packer's on there.
Here's a weird subplot. Because I had such a void for March Madness, I'm so used to directing all my announcer anger at one person. I had a void. I actually turned on Bill Raftery a little bit. And I've loved him forever.
Angry Bill Raftery?
I just had nowhere to put my announcer anger, so I just kind of directed it at him a couple of times.
I'm like, mad at Raft. Raft is like the guy that Raft is having so much fun.
I know.
You can't be mad at Raft?
I had nowhere to go. It's not March Madness unless I'm mad at an announcer. So
well, who's had a better run than Raft, by the way? He had the 6-0 game, then every game he had in the first round. He had those Friday night games.
Yeah. I don't know. I feel like I gave him a couple settle downs from my couch during the weekend. A couple, you know, it's 10 to 6, he's screaming. It's like, all right, settle down.
Onions! You know what's funny? If somebody, and what's great about March Madness is you have so many people who aren't familiar with the games, with the teams, with the announcers. I was trying to imagine if somebody just comes in, they're tuning in, you know, somebody at work convinced them to fill out a bracket and they're sitting there watching the game. And all of a sudden they hear somebody talk about Andre's Onions, lingerie, on the deck. They would have no idea what he's talking about, right?
Yeah.
Why is he talking about lingerie? Onions, is he going produce shopping? What is he talking about?
He's also one of those guys who I have no idea what his age with is. He could be 85 or he could be 45 and I'd have no idea. He's somewhere in that 40 year span. He's been around forever. I can't remember.
He aged really well and he's been doing this for about, 20 years as announcing?
Even more.
I've known him for about 50. I met him. He came up and did a game in Northwestern, and I got to know him. Really nice guy, great guy. Mike Wilbon tells a story of when he was covering Georgetown, and Billy Raftery was at Seton Hall, and Raftery got mad, and he slammed his fist down on the scorer's table, and he broke Mike Wilbon's computer.
Really?
And Wilbon starts yelling at him, and he says, you know, you messed up my computer. I got to write my story. So Raftery comes out and says, look, whatever you need. You know, Wilbon missed the press conferences and everything. He was trying to fix his computer. And Raftery just sat down and basically gave him, you know, whatever quotes he needed, gave him a personal interview to help him out with this story. That's the kind of guy Bill Raftery is. And you're mad at him. You're yelling at Bill Raftery.
I'm not mad at him.
He's a journalist in trouble.
You know what? I'm not mad. I'm just confused. I have a lot of anger that it's in my stomach every year for March Madness reserved for this guy. And I have to get nowhere to put it. I'll direct it at my wife.
Are you a Kevin Harlan guy?
I liked him more about 10 years ago. I think he's toned it down a little to maybe, you know, become more professional and increase his whatever marketability. I liked him more. There's some classic NBA games that they show with him in like the mid late 90s.
Right when between the eyes.
Oh yeah,
his all time best was Kevin Garnett with no regard for human life.
Yeah, yeah. It slips out sometimes. I thought he was a little reserved. Poor Gus though. I mean Gus. Even on Sunday, Gus didn't get it.
But it's like you can't force it.
No, you can't.
You can tell he's waiting for that moment, and it has to happen organically, and the games just are not allowing it to happen for Gus.
Well, if you had to pick a region for Gus for this weekend, Thursday through Sunday, would you go with East, Pitt Xavier, and Duke Villanova, South, Oklahoma, Syracuse, or UNC Gonzaga, Midwest, Louisville, Arizona, MSU, Kansas, or the West, UConn, Purdue, or Memphis, Mizzou? I think I like that last one for Gus.
West, well, isn't that where he did his Gonzaga thing? I think it was in Phoenix.
Oh, was it?
When he had his famous Gonzaga call.
I think that Memphis, Mizzou game is going to be nice. I like that one. Hey, that could be like one of those 90-89, flying up and down, 10 points in the last 30 seconds types games. We got to make sure Gus gets some
games. I like Memphis because, you know, they're kind of free-flowing. You know, they'll jack up threes, you know, they'll drive to the hoop. They are a fun team to watch, and they don't seem as robotic as some of these other teams that you see out there during the tournament. So any Memphis game is going to be good.
Let's talk about the West. UConn, Purdue, Memphis, Missouri. Andy Katz in an ESPN.com today said that UConn would be the new overall number one if they receded this tournament. That's how well he thinks they're playing. I'm not quite as sold. What do you think?
They're looking pretty good. To beat Price is playing great.
Price looks good.
You saw Louisville shaking. That's the thing I've had with Louisville is that they just have these stretches.
Yeah.
When they just go sour. And I've been scared about them. at their best, they are the best, and you have to be proud of their and impressed by their accomplishments, winning the Big East regular and postseason tournament. And sometimes I ask myself, shouldn't we be looking at that? They were the best team in the best conference consistently, but they just have those dry stretches. And, you know, Connecticut, I'd like to feel better about, but they've had their ups and downs this year, too. Pitt, as we've seen, not that impressive in the tournament.
I'm out on Pitt.
There's no team that I can fall in love with. Kansas, do they have enough? You like Aldridge? You like Collins? Do they have enough around them?
I don't know if they have enough. I don't like that Morningstar guy that much. I don't know. Their swing spots seem a little shady to me. I don't know, but I like Gonzaga. Gonzaga, I'm sorry. did the old, they get mad if you don't say the Zag. I just like their team. I like the way they responded in that close game. It seems like they have a lot of different guys that can be. It reminds me a little bit of Kansas last year, where there's no guy you have to key on. You know what I mean? Like with Duke, if Gerald Henderson's not making his shots, they're done. At least from what I've seen. It looks like they just look to him, and they don't really have any other places really to go.
See, I kind of don't like that. Maybe it's the NBA in me, but I like seeing one guy just carry a team. I like the Carmelo Anthony championships. I like a Danny Manning.
That
one guy can just bring a team all the way to the championship.
That doesn't happen very often, though. Usually it goes the other way. Usually it's,
you know, Magic Johnson, Larry Bird getting his team to the final, to the championship game. Isaiah Thomas, when he did it.
You know what's underrated?
North Carolina just had no answer for Isaiah Thomas that year.
What about Glenn Rice, who didn't win, but I think he was in that class.
Oh, he did win.
You're right.
Yeah,
he beat Seton Hall.
But that was a great team. That was an underrated team. You look at Glenn Rice,
team.
What a good pro he was. Lloyd Vaught, Ramil Robinson managed to stick around the league for a while.
Was Gary Grant on that team?
No. That was Gary Grant, Antoine Joubert team.
Yeah. Oh, I like the Antoine's mustache. Remember that? It kind of looked like Morris Day.
Antoine the Judge Joubert. So I'm a Big Ten. You know, I went to school in the Big Ten, and I miss having a good. The Big Ten just seems so irrelevant in the tournament now.
I know. It was nice having Michigan back, though. I had the Fab Five flashbacks. I know they didn't do well, but I just liked having them.
I miss having them as a favorite. I miss having them go to the Final Four. I love their fight song. I love hearing that at the Final Four. Let me tell you, the NCAA tournament is one of my favorite things to cover because it has a great pace to it. You go there, you know, first couple rounds, it's really busy, and, you know, you're locked in that gym. The first day, you got four games. You're just in the gym. It feels like 20 hours. And then you get an off day and then another game, and then you come home, and then the next round. It just has a nice pace to it. You're not worn out. You know, you get to come home in between the rounds. The access is great for college, which is usually very restrictive. You have open locker rooms, which you never have. And then on the off days, you can get down to about 8 or 10 reporters to one guy, which is a pretty good ratio considering what a big event it is.
Yeah.
So it's a very underrated event to cover.
But don't they stick you like in the boondocks now?
I haven't seen it. Yeah, you're right. You know what? I didn't notice that, but you're right. Now that I think back about it, because you used to just see the first four rows used to be all media.
Yeah, not anymore. Not when there's money to be made.
You still have some, but yeah, they could sell. But you don't see fans anywhere, though. You look around, and especially in the upper parts of some of those arenas, nobody.
It's a lot of white guys in their 50s. You were the one who told me that the NBA All-Star Weekend was called the Black Super Bowl, which I then named that whatever year's column that was. I think the NCAA Final Four is the white Super Bowl.
The opposite. Well, you know what it is? It's the white male Super Bowl. Because at least in the Super Bowl, you have females. It's all men at the Final Four. Here's what you have. You have the assistant coaches who show up for the convention, and they're trying to get a job, and they're walking around the lobbies in their sweatsuits.
Right.
And then you just have the 50-year-old alums hoping to recapture some glory. Then you kind of have the Final Four junkies who apply for the lottery every year and hope to get tickets so they can sit in the upper decks of a dome to watch basketball that's being played a mile away. That's it. And there's no women. Why? Because the players aren't making any money, so you don't have any groupies.
So maybe it's the Sausage Party Super Bowl.
That's what it is. It's the annual Sausage Fest.
Sausage Fest. Joe Mead, can we say that? Don't take that out. That's funny.
I think we've said it before.
Okay, good. I like calling it also. I think calling it the White Super Bowl is funny just because that would insinuate that the Super Bowl itself, like what would the, I guess the Super Bowl would just be the Super Bowl? Yeah, or something.
Well, but the Super Bowl is corporate.
Yeah.
And this is not corporate America. There's some, you know, there's your NCAA sponsors, so they're there, but they don't seem to dominate the way that the corporations dominate at the Super Bowl. And you don't have this just influx of overweight, balding alums They just bring nothing to the table.
It always seems to be in like a city that you probably wouldn't want to go to. Like, where is it this year? I guarantee it's not
in Miami.
Not a good one.
Well, because the problem is once they committed themselves to going dome only, yeah, you take Miami out of the equation. At least Phoenix is somewhat possible now because you've got the big stadium in Glendale. But that's why I was so sad when they blew up the King Dome, because I thought, man, there's never going to be another Final Four in Seattle. The first Final Four I covered was in Seattle in 1995. That wasn't the first Final Four. The first one I did was New Orleans. But I did the last Final Four in Seattle, which was 95. That's not going to be in the mix anymore. New Orleans is surprisingly low in the rotation. You know, they should be going there. But now they're going to Indianapolis. Detroit? The Final Four is in Detroit this year?
I know. I just proved my own point. It's Detroit this year, Indianapolis next year, and then 2011, Houston.
That could go either way.
Oh, no, it can't. Come on.
Are you just permanently down on it from
I'm so down on Houston.
Football experience?
The fact that they had that many sporting events in a row in Houston, and it's just such a sprawling, terrible city for a giant sporting event like that. I'm all for, you know, we've talked about this. The best, my favorite All-Star weekend I've been to is Denver. It was all in one place. Everywhere I needed to go, I was near something else. You know what I mean?
You
don't want
to
sprawling.
New Orleans, did you?
No, I love New Orleans. But New Orleans had that, people had that, we're trying to rebuild the city. I didn't feel like it was like...
Wasn't that uplifting?
It was uplifting. It was different,
How many places
though?
Do you go where people are actually excited to have the NBA around? And they were, like, grateful.
It was uplifting. But I felt like that had that whole weekend, the success of it, and what I remembered about it had really nothing to do with the NBA itself. You know what I mean? Like, Denver, it was just... It was
the
efficient.
Celebration of the NBA?
No, Denver's just efficient. Stuff was all in the same place, and you moved around, and... I guess the question is, what is the goal of those sports weekends? You know, like, because we look at it selfishly. What is the easiest way for me to hit as many things as possible and so I can have a column or whatever afterwards? But, like, if you're a fan, you probably want to – I mean, New Orleans.
Might be in New Orleans,
best case scenario, right?
I mean,
yeah.
Yeah, that was my first Final Four is New Orleans. We were hanging out at Pat O'Brien's. The Kansas cheerleaders were there teaching me the Rock Chalk Jayhawk chant. I did Rock Chalk Jayhawk chant in the middle of Pat O'Brien's. You know, those are the type of things you want to get out of a Final Four, right?
Yes. So what do we get out of, like, Detroit this year?
See, I don't even know where the hangout is, what to do. You know, I mean, the thing is, a lot of times with the Super Bowl, no matter what the city, you know, we were there for the Super Bowl a couple years ago in Detroit, and you still had the Maxim party, you still had the Playboy party, so you're still going to have fun. Mm. There's still going to be interesting events, but at the Final Four, you don't necessarily have that.
What are your feelings about NBA All-Star Weekend in Dallas next year? Very intriguing.
You know, you have Cuban and Jerry Jones.
Yes.
And those guys get it done. Say what you will about them, but those guys know how to make things happen, and they are not going to let people have a bad time on their watch.
I totally agree.
I think it's going to be extravagant. It's going to be outrageous. Mark Cuban and Jerry Jones collaborating. Think about that. In Texas, no less. Where,
I'm
you know,
excited.
They go over the top on everything.
Next year could be a big year because we have the Dallas NBA All-Star Weekend, and then like about, I guess it would be 11 months later, the Super Bowl is going to be back in South Beach.
Yeah. Well, the Super Bowl's in South Beach next year, right?
Is it next year or the year after? No, it's not next year. It's somewhere else next
Miami.
Year.
It's Miami next year.
Are you sure?
I'm pretty sure.
Hmm. What would it call it?
Super Bowl
44?
All-Star Game Dallas.
Oh, yeah, you're right. Oh, there you go.
So
we got South Beach and Dallas within the up. I'm going to call the divorce lawyer now.
Well,
it's all over.
Bill, if you made it through South Beach and Vegas All-Star game within a few weeks of each other, you can make it through South Beach and Dallas.
Make it through is an overstatement.
Survive. That was survive in advance.
Yeah. That was like, you're like the Warriors at the end of the Warriors where they're just, there were no winners. You're just happy to just be breathing.
Do you like that phrase, by the way, survive in advance?
Yeah.
Does that bother you?
It's a little reality showy.
Is the tournament the ultimate reality show? Is that why it appeals to you?
Kind of is. I like seeing the parents in the crowd. Like, I like seeing Blake Griffin's parents every minute.
Father's in the wheelchair?
Well, remember when we were growing up, when you or I was in it one year, and Tom Garrick had a blind dad, and they just kept showing him just over and over again? That was, I feel like that was the first time. Huh?
I love the guy in the wheelchair this year.
Oh, I love it. Okay. They always find out who's going to be the best parent that's going to tug my heartstrings, and then they just beat him into the ground with shot after shot, and I never get enough of it. I like seeing the parents. Western region. You like UConn coming out of that?
I do. I think I do. I'm going to have to check my brackets now. I have Memphis coming out of there.
I had Purdue coming out of there.
You and my girlfriend. My girlfriend, see, this is what is great about the tournament. My girlfriend had no idea what was going on. It never filled out a bracket, nothing. She said, I want to do this. I want to try this. So she fills one out. She went to Purdue, so she's got Purdue going all the way. So obviously she's not going to win this whole thing. But after day one, she was perfect. She was tied for the lead in our pool, and there I was lurking way back in the distance. But you have to love it, don't you? And she's checking the scores on her phone. She's watching March Madness on demand.
Yeah, the woman, like, the casual fans love the bracket.
Yeah.
It sucks them in.
Complete junkie. That's what's so great about it.
But you buried the lead. You buried the lead. You have a girlfriend?
That's a development, too.
Since when did this happen?
Valley Show. Since March Madness.
Oh, it's a recent girlfriend.
Very recent development, yes.
Wow. So she's on a 10-day contract right now.
I think I'm going to pick her up for the rest of the season.
You're going to sign her. Nice. And is this like a Ramon Sessions 2008 type thing? You bring her in, maybe give her a contract for 2010?
Long-term extension. That could happen too.
Well, just remember.
Doesn't opt out.
Beware of the economy. Yeah, beware of the economy. You got your cap. Midwest, Louisville, and Arizona.
Coming out of the West.
Yeah.
Midwest, despite my reservations, I have Louisville. Their problems bother me a little bit less than Kansas's problems. Kansas had some bad losses this year.
I know, but I just don't think the regular season matters once we get in and teams start playing well. You know what I mean?
Here's the thing. This is why I hate picking this tournament this year. It's just whose flaws bother you the least.
You're not worried with Arizona? You're not worried at all about a little Bill Fisher potential with them?
No, I think they're run, and I'm mad I didn't pick them to go to the Sweet 16, but you were crazy if you didn't think they're going to win the first round.
Right.
That was one of the easiest calls in the tournament. And I should have counted on that angry momentum. And I was trying to think of another example of that, and I looked it up, and I couldn't figure out which team it was. But we've seen this before. When everyone dumps on a team that squeaks in and everybody says they don't belong in there, and then they just get in vengeance mode, and we'll show you. And
that's my theory.
You know, the Elite Eight.
That's my theory, and like an idiot, I forgot to incorporate the nobody believes in us theory.
Yeah, and they had not only did nobody believe in you, but a team with two first-round draft picks that nobody believes in.
And I think in the reverse, something happens in March Madness, that too many people believe in us theory, because I think that happened to VCU.
Yeah, I was looking at your bracket, and I thought you fell for that when you got suckered in, just because they did it to Duke, and just because everybody thought, oh, UCLA is going all the way east, and they're not that good, they're overrated. Now, they were going to lose to Villanova, but I think a lot of people got carried away at VCU. Didn't Obama pick VCU, too?
On the other hand, the game was right where I wanted it with 15 seconds left. They had the ball to Maynard, and he was going to win it.
You know what I hate is that you don't get any credit for that. Like, if you were bold enough to pick a 16 over 1, let's say you picked East Tennessee State over Pittsburgh.
Yeah.
You were a lot closer than even the final score indicates. You had a 10. Shouldn't there be something that rewards you for being gutsy enough to pick a complete long shot, a 15 and 16 seed, and if they come close, I think you should be rewarded for that somehow, showing that you weren't completely crazy.
You mean you get like a moral victory point?
Yes.
I want one for North Dakota State, because I picked them to win, and darn it, they would have won if they had started making those shots at that 10-minute mark. The two of them go in, Gus goes nuts, they win the game.
I mean, I hate that if you would have picked East Tennessee State, and I mean, I was watching that game, watching my champion pick about to go out in the first round, and I was mortally afraid. And then now at the final, all it goes down is 72-62, another number one beats another number 16. And there's no type of reflection of just how close that game was and just how scary it was. There should be something.
Yeah, not just that, but you know, it wasn't a case of like the North Dakota State where the guy just got hot. Like the 16 seed, holy crap. I felt like they were controlling the game for the first 35 minutes. I've never seen, you know, we remember Princeton and Georgetown 20 years ago. And that was just Georgetown playing like crap and Princeton making some shots and the crowd getting into it. This was different. This was like they were playing on the same level. as Pitt. I didn't even really feel like Pitt was playing that terribly, but let's go to the South. By the way, I like Kansas.
Yeah, I can't.
I've talked myself into them.
I'm sorry, you got Kansas coming out of the Midwest.
I like Kansas. If I had to redo my bracket, I'd pick them. South has Oklahoma, Syracuse, UNC, and Gonzaga. As much as I like Gonzaga, it does worry me that Ty Lawson looked pretty good in round two.
Yeah, that changes things. And that was such a wild card. And I remember one year Carolina, I'm trying to remember who their point guard was that year. I think it was the year they won it all in 93. And their point guard got hurt in the conference tournament. And I was suspect about them. And then he wound up being okay. And I think they went on and won it all. And you could be looking at the same thing here.
Yeah.
And I was just so afraid, though. It was just too much of a wild card. And here's the thing with Carolina, and we get away from this, and I should have learned my lesson from a couple years ago when they played Illinois in the championship game. Sometimes it really does come down to the team with the most talent. And that Illinois game, I covered the tournament a lot that year, and I covered the Illinois-Arizona game when Illinois made that dramatic comeback. Yeah. And that team, you know, I kind of got caught up in the cult of that team because the team just became a mythical thing in Illinois because it was such a great group of overachievers, and they were such a teamwork, and they played so well together. And so that became the theme going into the championship game. North Carolina has the better players, but Illinois has the better team. And I bought into that. And then I'll never forget, back when they were sitting us all courtside. So I'm sitting there, I'm right by the court, I'm watching these two teams warm up. And the North Carolina guys were just so clearly better than the Illinois guys. And I picked Illinois, and I just knew right away. I said, I'm going to lose. Illinois is going to lose. North Carolina's better.
Yeah.
And when you have Ty Lawson on the court, and you look at all those players, isn't North Carolina just better?
It goes down to just look at who has the most potential draft picks. Although, on the other hand, if you did that with Wake Forest, which is one of the reasons I had them go to the Final Eight, you got kicked in the groin. Because they have three of the top 16 in the DraftExpress.com lottery right now. And the guy who was ranked number 8, Jeff Teague, put up a stink bomb. Did you watch that game?
Nowhere to be found. Well, this kind of team has disappeared.
7 turnovers.
You know what is interesting, though, is that think about how many great players never made it to the Final Four.
Yeah.
Or never got a whiff of a championship.
David Robinson.
Tim Duncan. David Robinson, great pros. I mean, Tim Duncan, he might be your number one pick in any draft. If you draft any player in the last, say, 15 years.
Right.
Duncan's right up there. And
Kobe.
And yet couldn't dominate. Well, Kobe never played the tournament.
I know, I'm kidding.
Guys, if Kobe would have played, Kobe would have won 8 NCAA championships if he'd gone to college, right?
It would have been pretty interesting, actually, to see. Because remember how good Kobe was as a rookie? Like, you know, nobody even expected him to play. And by the end of the year, he airballed the losing shot of that playoffs. But sticking that guy what would that have been, 97?
It would have been the 96-97 Duke team.
Wow. That's where he was going?
He's always talked about it, yeah.
Really? Oh, that's like two worlds colliding for me. My least favorite college team, my least favorite NBA player. can we do life over? And I want to see what that would have been like. 3 years of Kobe at Duke.
You know what's funny was the guy that was leading the Around the Horn pool that had like 49,000 entries.
Yeah.
This would drive you crazy because his screen name was like Kobe Duke. And he picked the Blue Devils to win. He's not leading anymore, but at one point yesterday over the weekend, he was leading. So would that just have drawn you crazy if a guy named Kobe Duke won the NCAA pool?
I would have hated that. And by the way, I also hated my podcast last week was talking about how weird it was that Duke's Gerald Henderson had the same name as Henderson Steals the Ball, Game 2, 1984 Finals. And it turns out that's his son.
Yeah.
So,
that's why it's very difficult for me to watch. As you know, that was one of the most painful moments of my childhood.
I hope so.
Because the Lakers would have won that game and they would have swept the Celtics. But I just hearing the name Gerald Henderson, it's taken me this long in his career to even be able to watch. I had to turn the TV away. I had to change the channel because every time they showed it, it brought back. I mean, imagine if there was a player who just by his name forced you to think of the ball going between Buckner's legs.
Oh, there's about 9 of them. Yeah, I wouldn't like it. Although, on the other hand, the most amazing thing in retrospect about the Henderson Steals the Ball game was that James Worthy somehow emerged as Big Game James. It was one of the 5 worst passes ever thrown in the NBA playoffs.
Yeah,
single-handedly turned the finals.
Well, 4 years later, though, he's the finals MVP.
Yeah, but you're the one who said that Magic was the one who willed him. He was like Dr. Frankenstein. That was your theory.
But the next year, Magic did.
No, 88, Game 7. That was Magic just...
No, that was worthy.
And Magic. Magic was willing him that year.
That was worthy.
Come on.
He had double that game, didn't he?
He did 36-16-10. Against, like, Dennis Rodman and Adrian Dantley. Like, not a cheap one either. It's not like he was doing against Alex English, but...
That's ball. See, I mean, you can talk about these NCAA games, but, you know, James Worthy putting that up in a Game 7 of the NBA Finals.
It's pretty good.
That's
pretty
ball.
Good. And then they cheated to win at the end, but we won't talk about that. Johnny Flynn, you like, he could run about 10 teams right now.
Love Johnny Flynn.
This is my favorite bracket, the South, because of all the potential prospects in it. Oklahoma, Syracuse, UNC, and even Gonzaga. Gonzaga doesn't have, like, lottery picks or anything, but they have a couple guys, I think, that are actually...
Well, here's the thing, too. Talk about a, you know, discrepancy in your backcourt. Johnny Flynn's this great guy, classy guy.
Yep.
And then he's in the backcourt with Diefendorf.
Yeah.
Who was in an altercation with a female student.
Yeah, that's not good.
And, you know, you think, should this guy... It's hard to get in that Syracuse bandwagon and feel the joy and the love when you're thinking, should this guy even be eligible to play right now?
Did Blake Griffin give you everything you wanted in those first two games as our number one pick in a couple weeks or a couple months?
Yes. He made some big-time plays. Oklahoma didn't always give me everything I wanted because sometimes you'd see him. There was one play, he blocked a shot, sprints down court. He's the first guy down court, is posting up some dude, and his teammate jacks up a three-pointer.
Right.
It's what we were talking about earlier. It's the type of thing that drives me crazy about college basketball. And I saw the same thing with Durant when he was at Texas. So it's not Blake Griffin's fault.
No.
But please utilize, you have the best player in the league. Please get in the ball, especially when he's making plays and hustling. But he is the goods. I'm sold on him. That's why I picked Oklahoma to beat Carolina. I think they'll have the best player on the court. As many good players as Carolina has, I think Griffin, maybe this is one time where one great player will be enough.
I'm finally down with
it.
I'm finally down with him. I had seen him a couple of times, and I hadn't seen him really kick the level of rear end that I needed to see for a guy who was just hands down number one pick. And I thought he pushed it a level or went up a level in the first two rounds. So we'll see. That's going to be a very cool game, Oklahoma-Syracuse. I'm excited for that one. I like both of those, UNC Gonzaga, too.
Do you think we'll see Oklahoma? Oh, you don't have Oklahoma UNC, right? You got Gonzaga coming out?
I think I have Gonzaga.
Are you staying with
UNC.
That, or are you retracting it?
Well, I don't know. I'm in that zone where I want it to happen, so I can't think logically about it. I mean, I think the safe bet, because Lawson is obviously back, is UNC. They're the most talented of those four teams.
I mean, I don't penalize people for changing their picks. Obviously, you can't change your bracket, but
right.
Having seen the teams in the tournament, if you're not beholden to your picks that you made before you saw a lot of these teams play and before you saw them respond to the pressure of playing in March. So
right. I definitely think Gonzaga could beat UNC and has a really good chance. But the UNC, as you said, sometimes talent's just going to win, especially at this level. Let's go to the East, the last one. We got Pitt-Xavier, kind of a weird game. And then Duke-Villanova. And everybody in the nation rooting for Villanova at this point. They might have to drag out who was the old guy who was on the bench for the 85 team? The guy that they had at the end of the bench who was like 100 years old. They might have to drag him back out, alive or dead. Yeah,
yeah,
alive or dead, and we need to see him again.
Exhume him if necessary.
Yeah, exhume him. Exhume him and embalm him. I like Villanova. If I had to pick out of these four, Pitt has not shown me what I need to see.
I like Villanova, too. I had them beating Duke. I had Pitt winning the region, but I think if I were going to do it today, I'd go Villanova, too.
I like Cunningham.
The toughness.
Yeah.
Man, did they just punk UCLA? UCLA wanted no part of that. And
I like, you know, they have one thing that I enjoy, the reader pointed out, that they have the two Corys in the rotation, Corey Stokes and Corey Fisher. The dramatic
like
return of the two Corys.
It's like reality show, right?
Yeah, it feels like Destiny. So you think of Villanova, too?
If I had to go right now, yeah. I just cannot, in good conscience, continue to pick Pitt.
Okay.
Because they've been so disappointing to me.
So who do you have winning it all? From what you've seen, not on your bracket.
Now we're doing the revised.
Revised, if your life depended on it, you can only pick one of the 16 teams.
Man, I might go Louisville.
Wow.
Despite their scary flashes, I think at their best are the best. I'd say Louisville or Carolina.
I'd go with Carolina. And I'm mad I didn't pick them. I got talked out of Lawson because I heard the big toe was bad and all that stuff, but obviously it's fine. And they have the most talent.
It might just come down to that.
And our boss, John Skipper, went there, so we should root for them anyway. Quick, because we're running along here, quick NBA. How you feeling about the Lakers?
Worse than I was 2 weeks ago.
Really? How come?
I just don't know if they have it. Yeah, I saw the recent homestand. I was at all the games, and they barely beat Dallas, and they lost to Philly. Yeah, they barely beat Golden State, and they're just not playing with that determination. I don't know if they have that lockdown defensive mentality.
Well, I can tell you they don't.
Yeah, I guess it's not even an option, right?
Yeah, it's not an option.
Brief flashes of it from the beginning, but I just don't think when it gets down to it, they can say, okay, we're going to just deny you. You're not scoring right now. I don't think they have that in them. So right now, if I had to pick, it'd be Cleveland, believe it or not.
Well,
maybe that's not that far-fetched.
I'm not giving you the believe it or not on that because
they have not going that crazy out there. But just, you know, LeBron is starting to look like he's just locking in and you know, maybe he just says, you know what, I'd like to win a championship in Cleveland before I leave. It could be a matter of that, but he just looks like he wants it more than anybody.
But he's looked like that all season, though.
Yeah, but lately, you know, even more so than Kobe. Kobe looking tired, that's another reason I'd be concerned. He went like 5 for 15 and 9 for 21 in back-to-back games.
You know what the best thing that happened to LeBron was? When Dwayne Wade kind of went off and everybody got all excited about Dwayne Wade and LeBron just went into FU mode for about 2 weeks. By the way, I'm still here. Yeah, he did.
FU mode, you love that more than anything, don't you?
I like when my NBA players go into FU mode. And the thing with Kobe is we saw it the game after Bynum got hurt. And a lot of it was a result of the fact they're playing the Knicks. But that was an FU performance by him. But
has there been a college? That's the thing. You don't see college guys going to FU mode.
No, I don't think it's.
Their coaches won't let them do it.
No, they don't have the ceiling as a talent yet. They're not. They're still trying to figure out who they are as players. You know what I mean? Kobe's stats, dropped a little this month, down to 27. But you mentioned the tire thing. So he's played every game now for 2 years, and
Olympics.
Did the Olympic thing. Really hasn't gotten a rest. Put a lot of miles on himself in the playoffs. I think they played 101, 102 games last year. And, I agree with you that the whole team looks a little bit worn out, but you know, on the other hand, it's mid-March and this seems to happen a lot with the NBA.
And they can get it going. And isn't it amazing how the league, I was just listening to your podcast with Klusterman about how there can be so many games you just don't care about.
Yeah.
But it's like the whole league doesn't care. It's almost like it just acknowledges that nobody's paying attention to us right now. Everybody's watching March Madness.
Right.
So we'll just resume playing hard again in April when we take over.
It's a great point. I don't know what the word would be, but that we should go to a 72 game season or 75. 82 is too long. And this is when you really start to see the guys drag because they're kind of saving themselves a little for the playoffs. They're kind of ready for the playoffs to start or they're not going to make the playoffs. You know, so it's a combination of things.
What if they held All-Star game weekend in March?
It's not a bad idea. I still think there's got to be some sort of tournament they can do halfway through where guys, you basically get 2 weeks off.
Isn't that like soccer? Isn't soccer, there's always some, you know, CONCACAF Cup or something like that. This doesn't seem like they're continuously having tournaments in the middle of seasons.
Something where the number one seed throughout the playoffs would be at stake or something. You know, maybe put some sort of stake on it and then everybody gets that. You know, 2 weeks off, you have to play six games or whatever it is.
Then it'd be like the conference tournaments then. Don't you hate conference tournaments?
I'm just trying to come up with something because the season's too long and I know they're not going to change. You know, they want the finals to be in June because they don't want it to be in May sweeps for whatever reason.
Could they have a divisional tournament? Would that be like the equivalent of the NCAA's conference tournaments?
Or maybe have a tournament for between all the bad teams for the number one pick. I don't know. There's got to be something. But to your Cavs point, that team is really tough at home. In fact, the Lakers, I think, are the only team that's beaten them there. But LeBron really gains something from that crowd. It reminds me of how Bird used to feed on the Garden crowd and Magic used to feed on the Forum crowd. he feeds off the crowd, and he's just a different guy at home. He'll do three or four things in Cleveland that you might not see him do in the road. I think they're the clear number one right now. And do you think you get Bynum back?
Yes, but not at full speed right away. I mean, the last time we talked to Phil Jackson out here in L.A., he said, you know, probably about a month for Bynum, which puts it right at the end of the regular season. So maybe he's feeling his way in the early rounds.
But as you and I, the last time I saw you, we were at some Laker game, and we were talking about it reset the natural pecking order of this team, because I feel this way, and I think you do too. They're at their most devastating when it's Odom and Gasol as the forwards.
Yeah, so bring Bynum off the bench.
Right, and what they should have done all along.
He's a boost, too. That's another reason I'm not as high on the Lakers, because their bench hasn't been very good lately. And they were the best bench in the league in November, December, and they've fallen off. So now your bench gets better.
Right.
Your starting lineup's better with Gasol and Odom. And then maybe you're talking about the team in terms of the favorite again.
Bynum gives him shot blocking, maybe a low post option. Kobe's out of the game. Now, we don't know. He's hurt. He might not be healthy. But I always thought that was the move. And I can't remember if I thought of this or you did or somebody else did, but it did seem like with Lamar in a contract year that a lot of that decision was based on kind of killing his stats so he wouldn't have a lot of market value.
It just seemed fishy. Too. I really do.
It just seemed like you just watch this team and their best five guys, Andrew Bynum is not one of them. I really like Andrew Bynum. I think he's got a lot of potential, but you know, when they play Odom and Gasol as the two big guys, nobody can match up with that if the team's clicking. So, I don't know, that seemed fishy to me. The other team that I can't figure out, well, actually I can figure out because they made a nice little trade, but it seems like Houston's starting to come on, which I'm
really
a little...
You feel confident in them come playoff time?
I don't know if I feel confident, but they are one of those teams that are at least good enough that because of the different weird looks that they have, they might be a tough series for people.
But can they beat Utah or San Antonio or the Lakers?
Well, are you...
Maybe New Orleans. Four out of seven?
I don't like what I've seen from Utah the last couple weeks.
Yeah, they dropped off, but they just don't go east very well. They're not a good road team this year.
Well, but I mean,
and they don't play defense like they did in the past either.
So you just gave me three reasons why I shouldn't like them. They can't play on the road. They don't play defense.
But they've got Darren Williams. Darren Williams would be the best player on the floor.
I was so much more excited about them 2 weeks ago. I thought for sure they were going to get. I mean, at gunpoint, who do you take for that other Western final slot?
It's Lakers, Spurs.
You think Spurs, huh?
Still. I don't think they're a threat to the Lakers, but I still think they get there.
60% of Manu, probably?
Yeah, I think that'll be enough against most teams. It just won't be enough against the Lakers.
I'll tell you a team to watch out for. Joe Meade, get prepared to record this, and then we'll play it again in June. Or if I'm wrong, just destroy the tape. If Portland can get anything out of Odin, I would not want to play them in a series.
That's another team horrible on the road.
I know horrible on the road. But I mean, you can nitpick.
They don't have
with
anybody them. Who's won anything. This is all going to be new to them when they get to the playoffs.
But I think they can win two rounds. Or no, I'm
one
sorry.
Round.
I think they can win one round and get to the
yes.
second round. Yeah, they could do what New Orleans did last year potentially.
Yes, exactly.
But it all hinges on Odin being able to give them 20 minutes a game and doing Greg Oden things, and who knows? That guy just is jinxed. He can, you know, sit down and break his buttock. Like, it just seems like every horrible thing that might happen. I don't like Denver. I don't like Dallas. I don't like Phoenix. As you said, Houston, something feels not right about that.
Not come playoff time. I can't see them beating teams 4 out of 7.
There's a little too much Ron Artest at crunch time for my liking. That's one of those guys that know who you are.
Off to Kobe or do something else that's ill-advised.
But he's one of those guys. He's like one of those actors. He's like a Joe Mantegna. Like, you like him if he's your fifth guy, but if he's leading the movie, you're probably in trouble.
more excited we are talking about the NBA playoffs, by the way, than the tournament, as great as the tournament is.
Well, you know why? Because we're both competitive and we like things to make sense and we like to try to figure out how things are going to play out. And in March Madness, we don't know. We're relying on 19 and 20-year-old kids.
Reality show.
Yeah. Anything else we could cover? I think that's it. You better spend time with your girlfriend.
See, now relationship advice? Now I got to come on your podcast and get relationship advice?
I think you should take her out to dinner tonight. There's no games. You watch basketball all weekend. Take her for a nice little dinner.
Thank you, Phil. I'm sure she'll appreciate that.
You get a little trinket. All right, Jay. I'll talk to you before the playoffs. You can read Jay on ESPN.com along with myself. Talk to you soon.
See you.
That was Jay Adande appearing courtesy of the Subway Fresh Take Hotline. Joe, you have an answer for the chalk thing?
I do. Well, at least I've various terrible sources on the internet tell me similar things. I think it went back to horse racing and betting on horse racing, and the favorites, you know, would be up on the chalkboard, and they would have to keep adjusting, you know, the line on the favorites because people would just keep betting on them, and all the chalk, you wouldn't be able to read the name of the horse anymore.
Hmm.
So you would just bet on the chalk.
Interesting. Joe Mead. This is one of the most worthwhile contributions I think you've made to the BS Report.
Appreciate that.
How are you feeling about Terrell Owens skipping the workout?
I do not care at all. It's not mandatory. How many Bills stars ever go to those workouts? I don't think that usually happens.
All right. You keep talking yourself into this.
All right, I will.
I have a couple college basketball emails. Chris J. from D.C. points out that the Marquette-Missouri line was 3. Joe, did you see that? The guy stepped on the line?
Yeah.
A little fishy. Hate to see.
You think he stepped on it on purpose?
I'm not accusing anyone. No, I'm kidding. But it's just, imagine being in Vegas. You have Marquette plus 3. They have the ball. Worst case scenario, it's going overtime and you might lose the bet. Best case scenario, they just shoot and miss. And he steps on the line. Technical foul. Like that, that's a bad gambling loss. It's one of the worst ones. Ryan from Austin points out that the University of Arizona making the Sweet 16, my whole theory about the cluster of sports teams in a city where if one does well, it can kind of transfer to the other ones. So the Arizona football Cardinals start it, and then it goes to the Suns, now starting to make a run. University of Arizona, they make the Sweet 16. Maybe the D-backs are a sleeper. This could get interesting. I keep an eye on this. And then finally, a couple BC grads did notice, or at least theorize, that I backed BC because I secretly hate them and was trying to jinx them. And you know what? You guys are proven correct. So a couple more emails. Hold on. Patrick from Austria. I like that people from Austria are listening to the podcast. He listened to the March Madness podcast where I murdered the Draft Express guy's name. He's in for a special podcast where listeners can email in names that I have to pronounce correctly. He thinks this would be hilarious. I kind of agree because I'm the Michael Jordan of mispronunciations. Hey, Joe.
Yeah.
Where could we, if we had set up an email address and people could email us names that I would have to try to pronounce, what would the email address be?
Well, we can set up an email box.
All right, let's. You know what? We'll set up an email box, and then after the next podcast, I'll tell you where to send the names. Maybe I'll try to pronounce like 5 each one. I mean, I still don't know how to pronounce the Draft Express guys. It was G-I-V-O-N-Y. I think Givony. I don't know. Adrian from Toronto asks, or actually he just writes, I'm happily married with 2 kids. Never get tempted to stray when I'm out. But when I listen to your podcast, I can't help thinking about the broad who says the BS Report with B. Simmons. I love the fact that he used the word broad. I haven't heard that one in a while. What's her story? How old is she? Is she available? More importantly, is she as hot as she sounds, or is it a 300-pound phone sex operator type thing? Joe Mead, do we know the answer to this?
I personally don't know the answer.
She does sound kind of smoking hot. Joe, find out the answer for us. Landry in Houston. After hearing your podcast with Joe House and his usual Subway order of a 12-inch double meat sandwich, I decided to try to eat one for myself. So I went to Subway, Eat Fresh, sat down with my sandwich and went to work. By the time I was finished, I felt like I was going to pass out. Mind you, I am 6'5" and 315 pounds. I am the size of an NFL lineman, and I cannot throw down the same amount of food as House. I feel like such a woman. He is not human. I got nothing to add. That's all true. I joked about Bill Simmons University on the House podcast about how my goal would be to have a university named after me or a college. John in Richmond, Virginia said that the campus locations, it should be where I'd have multiple locations, like how they have the University of California at Santa Barbara and at Los Angeles. He thinks the campus location should be Boston, LA, and Las Vegas. I would also include Milwaukee. I've always enjoyed Milwaukee. Course offerings include investing taught by Cousin Sal, advanced NBA trade machine, The History of Reality TV, The Lost Yankee Dynasty with special guest instructor Jack O. It's kind of a cheap shot. My favorite fast food offerings, and The Karate Kid, Rocky, and Shawshank, Titans of the America Cinema by President Simmons. I like that. I might have to work on a curriculum for Bill Simmons University. Then somebody else emailed me and said that there's a Simmons College in Kentucky that was started by a former slave named William J. Simmons, which coincidentally, my middle initial is J. And this was started like, I don't know, 100 and whatever years ago. But there is a Simmons College. Thought that was at least slightly interesting. Somebody from New York, Mike Barish, emailed that for whatever reason, him and his friends have decided that David Wright needs a mustache. And he's trying to spread the word. He has a website called The Wright Stash. I mean, the internet just continues to get better and better. The Wright Stash. So it's The Wright and then STACHE.com. Basically trying to convince David Wright to grow facial hair. Now, I feel attached to this idea because I've been pushing for Clay Buchholz to grow Fu Manchu for the last 2 years. I just don't think he's intimidating enough. But let's see how that progresses. Jesse in Toronto just came back from a Raps-Clips game yesterday, which the Clips got blown out in. He said, I made a point of watching the Clipper players, specifically Baron Davis, during any timeout in the game. Early in the first quarter, there was a timeout, and I'm watching Brian Skinner ignore Dunleavy with his back to the coach as he is drawing out a play. Then I lock eyes with Baron, and I kid you not, he rolled his eyes at me. I cracked up laughing and had a difficult time explaining to my mom how Dunleavy had ruined the team and why I was laughing. Mike Dunleavy, everybody. All right, and finally, Keith from Fort Campbell, Kentucky, wrote that he sent a nice email, actually, and that's not why I'm reading it, but he said he's been a reader since 2001. He's been reading regularly ever since. He is right now on a recent deployment to Iraq. He's sitting there listening to my most recent podcast, listening to the NSA attorney. So he writes, just want to thank you. When I heard you talk about Ryan from the real world, who did his deployment with my unit the tour before last, it occurred to me that you might like to know that you made a contribution. You gave me and my guys during deployment something to argue about in the Humvees on seemingly never-ending patrols, something to look forward to on the internet, something to talk about with college buddies. He goes on, but his point is that so many people don't understand what we do and what sports mean to the guys overseas. Anyway, thanks. That's Lieutenant Keith Guglielmi, another tough name for me to pronounce. He's in the A Company 1-187 Infantry 101st Airborne Division Air Assault. So I want to say hello to those guys. Good luck to everybody. I think it's neat that our guys who are serving overseas can actually keep up with stuff and they're not just, you know, in the middle of nowhere, not knowing anything that's going on. I think it's neat that they could listen to even a podcast as dumb as this one. So good luck out there. Stay safe. And we'll talk to you on Wednesday, I think, on the BS Report.
Whoa.
Thank you for downloading the BS Report with Bill Simmons.
Too much fun.
Check out more podcasts at the iTunes Music Store or at PodCenter at ESPNRadio.com.
Peace out.
And that concludes another episode of the BS Report. And here's 55 more words that Bill Simmons intended to mention, but unfortunately ran out of time. Now you can get any regular pile-high Subway footlong for just $5. The keyword is any. The sweet onion chicken teriyaki, savory chicken and bacon ranch, the meaty taste bud pleasing Italian BMT. All the regular famous Subway footlongs, just $5. Subway, eat fresh. See store for details.